Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go.
Welcome into the Gramlich and McLean podcast, brought to you by Traeger Grills. And Eric McLean, regular season basketball is done. Throw it out the window. It is time for all postseason hoops from now on.
Guys, this is my favorite time of the year. We talked about it last week. I kind of teased it, threw it out there, but we are completely in postseason mode. I cannot wait. You will find me sitting in my chair watching basketball, men's, women's, if there's high school basketball on, for the next 30, 35 days. And that's all I'll be doing, but I might get up a little bit just to check on my Traeger grill.
I knew you were going there.
And before we dive into too much analysis and all this fun stuff, let me just tell you guys quickly about them. Traeger is the only wood-fired outdoor grill that smokes, grills, barbecues, and even bakes. I used to think that you had to have different grills that were good for different things, but Traeger just does everything, and it does it better. That's why Traeger is the official grill of Gramlich and McLean, and the fact is, nothing beats the flavor of food cooked over pure wood fire, guys. I absolutely promise it. There's endless possibilities on a Traeger, and it's so easy to use. Every time I cook something up, KG, I feel like a barbecue pro. Do yourself a favor. Find your local Traeger dealer today by visiting TraegerGrills.com/ACC.
Mac, thank you for telling us about our friends at Traeger Grills. Now, you brought up something at the beginning. You said you're going to be in your chair and you're going to be focused in on college basketball for the whole month. Are you a recliner guy?
Yes, Kelly. I'm
Is that a stupid question?
No, but I'm 6'5", 300 plus pounds. I have my chair, which is a recliner. Like, I don't want to be sitting in 90 degrees for 17 hours a day. I want to kick my feet up.
17 hours a day.
There's a lot of basketball being played. I'm watching all of it. The only thing I told you, I'm going to get an alert on my watch that says, hey, your Traeger's done. I'm going to get up, go get it, and come right back to the chair. And yeah, big recliner guy. But I tell you what, though, and this, I'm going to lose so much credit, and I'm debating even saying this. I'm not like a big, chunky, lazy boy guy. I think those are just too big. And it's probably because, you know, my house is a little small, a little dainty. I can't have this massive chair. It'll take up the whole living room. So I have it's big. It's max size, but it is a very eloquent, nice recliner.
See, okay, that was my next question was, I didn't think Khaki would let you have a
The cat's out of the bag. That is why. It's because of
Khaki. Recliner in the house.
You are correct. The boss said no, and honestly, I tried to look more masculine than I am, and you called me out on it. Thank you.
I knew it.
It's National Women's Day. We're recording this on National Women's Day, so girls run the world.
You better believe it, Mac. We know that. We know that for a fact. Speaking of girls, we had an amazing ACC Women's Basketball Tournament, Mac. That's how you segue.
It was incredible, guys. And, I mean, I don't know what else you could have wanted because, number one, there were no blowouts. There were great games, buzzer beaters, last seconds, teams that went on amazing runs and then just couldn't score the ball, and the other team went on amazing runs. Kelly, let's go back in time a little bit because I think the championship game is what we're going to spend a lot of time on right here. But I want to go back to Friday and really look at two games. Battle of the Twin Towers, the bigs, Virginia Tech, NC State. You've got Elizabeth Kitley, Elisa Kunane, two of the best centers in the country, not the ACC, the country, and they just duked it out. 20 points for Kitley, 27 for Kunane. What'd you see in that game, and was that kind of what you expected?
Yes, it was. Two of the best centers in the country is exactly right, Mac. They're each one of the top five finalists for the Lisa Leslie Award, which is the best center in the country. So you nailed that. And they both have eligibility remaining. Kunane's only a junior. Kitley is only a sophomore, which is terrifying. Because she is so good. And even better, Mac, they were AAU teammates.
I did not know that.
They're very, very good friends. Yes. And, of course, Wes Morris said, we recruited Kitley, but we already had Kunane, so that wasn't going to work. And Kenny Brooks found a way to get her to Virginia Tech. They're both from outside Greensboro. So they were both also playing very close to home. It was a really cool story. And I thought Kitley played super well. I thought Kunane played just a little bit better. And then in the end, NC State supporting cast won out. Asia Shepherd, who I love, who to me was the shooter of the year in the conference. I had her as my shooter of the year and one of the best pure scorers in the league. She tweaked her ankle in the game before the ACC tournament, and then she tweaked it again in the first game of the ACC tournament. So there's no way she was healthy. And Kai Crutchfield, give her a ton of credit. She's a lockdown defender for NC State. She locked her down, but I still just don't think Asia Shepherd was healthy, and so that was the main issue. And now she has a ton of time to rest and get ready for the NCAA tournament. Virginia Tech poised to make their first tournament since 06, so that is a big deal for the Hokies. But in the end, Kunaim was just too good, and you'll see that as an overall theme of the tournament, Mac. I was blown away by Elisa Kunaim.
Yeah, she led her team in scoring each and every game. Just looking at that Virginia Tech NC State game one more time, you look at the second quarter, 17-7 in favor of the Wolfpack, and then scoring 21 fourth quarter points. I mean, they just showed their dominance. Another game I want to look at that occurred on Friday, how about Syracuse? You heard it right here on this podcast that they would be the team if there was an outsider to kind of do it. And they did their best. They got a huge win, buzzer beater over Florida State. How'd they get it done?
Syracuse was so interesting coming into this tournament, as they have been interesting the whole season, because they left four players at home due to violation of team rules. So they had basically no depth. And then in the FSU game, Priscilla Williams, a freshman who starts for them, took a really bad fall, smacked her head on the floor, and was out. And we had heard concussion protocol, but she was taken out on a stretcher. It was really a bad scene, but she is okay. So Syracuse went into the game the next day against Louisville with basically six players. So you've already played a game. You've already played two games, actually, because you were the five seed. You're playing Louisville. Your depth is just depleted. And I think they ran out of gas. But overall, Syracuse proved that they could hang with anyone. They also didn't have Tiana Matakahia. She was out with a lower leg injury. Emily Inksler carried them. I thought Kira Lewis was great. Cardoso, the big 6'7" center inside. So Syracuse is a team that if you draw them in the NCAA tournament, you're going to be mad. Like when you see that draw on Selection Monday and you get Syracuse, you're thinking, oh no. Because you can't, how do you prepare for 6'7", Mac? How do you prepare for 6'7", Cardoso in the middle?
You can't.
So I think Syracuse has a very good chance of making the Sweet 16. It's just going to be tough. We'll see if they earned their way up to a 7 seed. And you'll hear me say this multiple times on the men's and women's side. No one, you don't want to be an 8-9, an 8 or 9 seed. Because you play that 8-9 game, sure, you win it, you're playing a 1. And the way the 1s are on both the men's and women's side, it's pretty much a wrap. So you want to be a 7 seed, or really you want to be a 10 so you don't have to play a number 1 seed in the NCAA tournament.
100% agree with you. And I think we're going to get even more and more into kind of bracketology and breaking it down. I can't wait for that. It's honestly the best time of the year. Let's look at this championship game on the women's side, because it was fantastic. Some people might say it was sloppy. It was ugly in the first half. That's championship basketball. And I think
both teams were nervous.
That's right.
Both teams looked
tight. They were, because there's a lot on the line. There's a number one seed on the line for this tournament. And I think you look at the ebb and flows of the game. Kunaim just, I mean, she balled out. She was the superstar that we know that she is. And then, of course, Reyna Perez. It was funny watching. It was almost like she's standing there. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And she's wide open. And then she realizes, oh, I'll just go ahead and win the
game.
And
Westmore's like, shoot it!
Right. We all hear it, and we're all yelling at the same time. And then she, of course, just bangs in the middle, the mid-range there for the huge win. But just break me down in this game. Did it kind of happen what you thought? Was it as crazy as you thought? Or was it just kind of, you know, a little bit random here and there?
It lived up to the hype. It was epic. We did our pregame show, and all of us were on the fence. None of us knew who to pick. So in the end, Coach McGraw and Monica went with NC State, and I went with Louisville. And I thought it was going to be close. And my reasoning was, to me, I'm going to take the superstar guard over the superstar post. Mainly because the guard can have the ball in her hands at all times. There's less chances she gets into foul trouble. There's, you know, you have to get Kunaim the ball, whereas Dana has the ball all the time. However, Kunaim was incredible. She was the star of that game from start to finish. Her touch around the basket, her physicality, whatever the word is I'm looking for, the way she rebounded the ball. And then get this, Mac. She is the only center in the top 50 nationally in free throw percentage. The only one. She's the only person in the top 50 nationally as well that's over 6 foot one. That's what makes her, that's what takes her over the edge for me. That's what makes her the best post player in the country for me. She shoots 86% from the free throw line. You can't foul her. Every other post player, if you give up a couple fouls inside, they're probably, you know, maybe they're shooting 70%, maybe 65, whatever. 86%, it changes everything. So she made some big free throws down the stretch in that game. And then Dana Evans just struggled a little bit. I'm not sure what it was. She got going towards the end. She made some big shots. She still finished, I think, what was it, Mac, 15 or 17. But she missed some threes. And I think the biggest difference maker for Dana Evans in this tournament, why she struggled, is her three-point shot wasn't there. She at some point during the season and last year, she was a 40% three-point shooter. She's down now closer to 35, and she just didn't make the big threes, which made the defense, it was a little easier to guard her. Her confidence wasn't as high because she wasn't knocking down threes. It didn't spread the floor as much for her team. So I thought that was the biggest difference maker. But, oh, man, it came down to Perez hit the shot and then Dana missed the shot. And, Mac, I want to say this, too. I know you've got thoughts on the game as well. Did you notice at the end of the game, Dana missed the three and you just saw the emotion? She just looked devastated, right? And then you see the emotion on the other side, NC State, losing their mind, super excited. And I know that we have that in the men's game. We do. Like the team that wins the NCAA tournament is going to be freaking out. They're going to be excited. Team that wins the ACC tournament, same thing. But I'm not sure that we have that kind of emotion and passion as consistently as we do in the women's game, because these players stay 4 years and they really care, and you can see them grow and develop, and they've been a part of these programs for 4 or 5 years. And I thought it was all encompassed in the way Dana just collapsed to the floor after she missed that shot, because it meant so much to her. And that's why I love college sports, and that's why I love women's basketball specifically.
No doubt about it. I think it was something, you know, I've heard you say that before, and the fact that they stay 4 years, we get to see true development and players get better and better and better. And when you look on the men's side, it's just, it's a stepping stone. It's a time to fill.
For some guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly there's 4 year guys and 5 year guys and et cetera, but most the goal and kind of the expectation, and we've heard guests say this, is to get to the league, and it's not to be a great college player. And so I think that is one of the biggest difference. I think that's why you see the pure emotion with the women's game, as you just said, is because it matters that much more. And I think it's a little bit more meaningful. And it's like, man, this is my team. And it's not just, oh, that was just what was next, and now I'm going to train for the draft. So I agree with you. And I think that, you know, I wish the rule would change, and we could do a whole podcast over this, but I wish that in the men's side.
I think it will soon.
I think so too. If you decide to go to college, you need to stay 3 years. I think you can do so much more with that. You develop so much better. You get some type of degree if you don't, you know, stay for the 4 years. So I think that's the way to do it. But, you know, it takes time and takes things to make that change. But I completely agree with you. Let's move over, speaking of the men and how they're not excited to play, let's move over to the men's side, because it was a crazy last week of the season going into the ACC championship. I mean, and let's start here at the very top. You've got FSU. Bless their hearts. My goodness.
Florida State.
We are screaming at the mountaintops. Put them in the top 10. Put them number one. I never said that. But they just go and embarrass me and get shellacked by Notre Dame, who not a terrible team, but, you know, we breaking news, we have Jordan Cornette coming on the next episode of the podcast. Cannot wait for that. So I'm not going to talk too negatively about Notre Dame, but their coach was just getting he should be fired chance. And then he's going to
from
students, and then he's going to go and beat number 11 Florida State. Kelly, what the heck is Florida State doing?
They can't play away from home. And it's very concerning, because as we have said multiple times, Mac, the NCAA tournament is not going to be played in Tallahassee, Florida. I'm sorry, guys. It's just not. That was truly shocking to me, because I remember talking about it on our pod last week and saying, FSU has BC and they have Notre Dame. Okay, they're going to win the league. Here we go. Even and I knew that FSU was bad away from home, even though knowing that, you should not go lose at Notre Dame. And that's not really a knock on Notre Dame. It's just Florida State. You should be better than that. And really, it's my main concern about FSU came to fruition in that game and almost all their road losses, where because they're so balanced, you don't have a Dana Evans. You don't have an Elisa Kunain. You don't have someone where we're getting them the ball. They're going to work. They're going to win this game for us. Florida State at times is almost too balanced. And it concerns me because I don't think they have an alpha. I don't think they have a player that can go take over a game.
That's exactly right. I mean, when you need a bucket, who's it going to be? And I think it's such an interesting thing with basketball because you have a team like Florida State, and you just talked about how they're so balanced. And we have the Scotty Barnes who for this game was the guy. And I think that for Florida State to go far in this tournament, I truly think that he has to be the guy. He has to
to
take that pass first mentality and throw it away and be the killer, be that Mamba mentality. Nobody on the floor can guard me. I'm 6'9", 6'10", 200 plus pounds. You can't stop me because ultimately they can't if he wants to do that, but I just don't know if he has it in him.
And is FSU built to do that?
Right.
Right? Is their overall roster built to do that?
Does everyone else shut down if that happens? I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. It's concerning. And it's weird though too, Mac, because do you feel better about UVA? Like if you had to pick, okay, which ACC team has the best chance to make the Final Four? Do you feel better about UVA compared to Florida State? Not really.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you maybe lean UVA because of experience, because of we've been there, done that, because of defense, because I think that's a tone setter where if you're not used to playing it, if you're not in the ACC and we know what we're getting, you're like, I don't know, it just punched me in the face when you play UVA.
Here's the reality, Mac. I feel pretty confident, depending on the draw, if they're not going to put Louisville and NC State on the women's side in the same part of the bracket. But depending on the draw, I really think we could have two women's teams in the Final Four. And I am not confident in saying we're going to have any men's teams in the Final Four.
If you guys hear that, that's my heart just shattering over here, breaking that basketball season potentially is going to be over.
We tell you how it is.
Right.
We tell you how it is, guys.
That's right.
But anyway, let's talk about these teams,
Matt. Yeah, I'm going to stay on this week because I think it was interesting to see Virginia really step up and get that ACC championship. You've got Clemson, who played very well, and you've got Alamir Dawes. You've got Amir Sims, who's playing really well. And then North Carolina blows Duke out, blew the doors off of them. And it was embarrassing. It wasn't fun to watch. It was like, okay, well, what else are we going to do tonight? So looking at those three games, I guess who impressed you the most between Virginia, Clemson, and North Carolina?
Probably North Carolina, because Duke is still talented. You know, they're still talented. It felt like they gave up about 8 minutes into that game, and UNC just set the tone. And I felt like the 3,200 fans in the building really made a difference, too. Roy Williams said, dadgummit, those were the loudest fans I've ever heard, loudest 3,200. So that's my Roy impression. So I thought they really showed up, and UNC was just so much more physical. They wanted it more. So I think UNC, they used that win to really springboard themselves into the tournament. I don't think they're on the bubble anymore. And then overall, Mac, Duke is at a point where unless they win the ACC tournament, they're not in.
They're out.
And here's my question to you, Mac.
They might not be in the NIT.
Okay, that's my question. If they get invited to the NIT, do they go?
No chance.
You can't.
It's embarrassing, right? Just say, COVID, we're out of here. Just take the
L. And especially too, the fact that Duke opted out of the rest of their non-conference games, how can they justify going and playing more non-conference games? They'll just use that
100%.
To get out of it.
And I would do it too. There's no shot that I'm playing that. So I agree with you. I think if they don't win at all, they're out of everything and they're done.
Politely decline.
Yeah. I mean, we saw teams do it with bowl season. It's not too weird to think about it. Let's talk about some all-ACC teams real quickly, because I think on the women's side, it was kind of like, okay, I agree with all of those. On the men's side,
it wasn't a lot of controversy.
On the men's side, I feel like there's some argument, and some people are really upset. Some people are kind of in agreement with it. Let me know your thoughts. 1 through 5, who did you think was like, I don't think they should be on there? Because you got to pick one.
This was really
you
difficult.
You got to pick somebody.
This was really difficult, Mac. When I saw Moses Wright was player of the year, I went, huh?
No, you didn't. Who do you think should have won?
Yeah, I did.
Say Matthew Hurt.
I don't
Matthew
know.
Say Matthew Hurt on his sub-500 team.
No, not Matthew
Say
Hurt.
Justin Champagne on his 3-win team.
I thought Carly Jones was the player of the year.
Not mad
Now, the fact that they ended up finishing seventh, I believe, really hurt them. Seventh, at least in the ACC tournament standings. Because at one point, they were in position for a top four. And I think it's very hard to give the player of the year to a team that's not top four. And that's why I was not a fan of giving it to Champagny. As great as he was, how valuable are you if your team is nowhere near the top four? And Louisville was very close to that. They just, with tiebreakers and things like that, they dropped. So that's why I thought Carly Jones should have been the ACC player of the year. Because when you look at these ACC teams, Mac, look at your other options, right? Moses Wright, ACC player of the year. Jose Alvarado, second team. Jose Alvarado could have been first team. He had Alvarado with him, where if Moses Wright struggled, which he didn't in February, but he did earlier in the year, Alvarado would pick it up. Alvarado won a lot of games for them. My main argument for Carly Jones, look at the rest of these all ACC teams. The only Louisville player to be found is David Johnson on honorable mention with 22 votes. That's why Carly Jones is player of the year to me, because he had to do everything for Louisville. If he does not show up, if he does not play well, if he does not carry that team, if he doesn't score, they don't win. The only other Louisville player to be found is David Johnson. Look at Jose Alvarado with Moses Wright, Jay Huff with Sam Hauser, Matthew Hurt. We know he had some help, even though you don't have anywhere else on this list, but also Duke right. collapsed at the end of the season. So that's why I think it's Carly Jones. I thought he overall was worth the most wins in the ACC, and that's why I thought he was player of the year.
And you know what argument that was? That is the Trevor Lawrence should have been the Heisman Trophy winner argument, and I agree with you. I agree with you. But you know what wins trophies nowadays? Statistics, and statistics recently. Listen to this. Listen to these points.
Yes.
17 points in his last game, 29 points against Duke, 14 rebounds, 31 points against Cuse, 26 points against Virginia Tech, 14 with 12 boards, 24 points. So that's what people have been seeing and thinking as they're casting right. these votes. And they're like, well, dadgum, Kelly, who else am I going to vote for? And, you know, I think that's what really settled it. I love the way that Moses plays. I think that his game is tremendous. He's trying to really rip the rim off each and every time he plays.
It's
a fun story. He went from a no star to ACC player of the year. So at the end of the day, I'm not mad about it. I think it's a great pick.
I can't take anything away from him, and I'm not saying he's not deserving. It's an incredible story. There's no doubt about it, Mac. And I thought he should have been most improved. I thought he should have been most improved player and ACC player of the year. And you can't deny that Georgia Tech got a top four. That's huge for Georgia Tech. But the other part of this, Mac, is you bring up the recency bias of it all. What I really believe happened is voters went in there and they thought, man, Moses Wright's been playing well, okay? No one else is going to vote for him, but I'll give him a vote. No one else is going to vote in player of the year. I think every voter went in there thinking that everyone else around them was voting Carleek or Champagny or Matthew Hurt. And he thought, you know what? I'll be one of those cool kids that really knows what's up, and I'm going to vote Moses Wright. That's truly what I thought happened. But seriously, Mac, congratulations to him. I have nothing against the guy at all. He's had an incredible year. He's so much fun to watch. But my vote would have gone to Carleek Jones.
I love it. I love it. And I think, again, it's kind of you and Luke Hancock and the rest of the Louisville Nation. But, you know, I think, again, when you look at it, when it's recent bias, it's statistic bias. And at the end of the day, that's kind of where they went. I did think it was interesting when you see these lists and it's just flooded with Georgia Tech players. And you're talking about ACC players.
It looks like Georgia Tech won the league.
It does. That's what you would think when you have an all defensive team with two players. You have the player of the year, you have the defensive player of the year. And it's just, it goes to tell you, number one, how competitive it really was this year, the parity in the ACC, and the fact that Georgia Tech cannot sweep but have major award winners, and yet they're only fourth. So I think it's just tremendous, and it's going to be a tremendous tournament.
It is. And one more thing I want to add, Mac, when it comes to the coach of the year. I am a huge fan of Mike Young. I've told you guys how nice he's been to me throughout my broadcasting career. He's just an excellent dude. He's a great guy, great person, great coach. I thought that Brad Brownell should have had more consideration for coach of the year in this discussion, because, and this is not Virginia Tech's fault, okay? So don't hear what I'm not saying, but overall, Virginia Tech's ACC schedule ended up being very manageable. They didn't have to play really any tough road games. They didn't go to Florida State. They didn't go to Clemson. They didn't go to North Carolina. Now, the North Carolina game was a COVID casualty. But overall, they got to play a lot of games at home, and they played an easier schedule. They played Notre Dame twice. They played BC twice, things like that. And Clemson played a really tough schedule. Overall, Clemson's strength of schedule is ranked 18th nationally. That's the toughest in the ACC besides Notre Dame. Notre Dame is actually 16th nationally. And look at what Clemson did against that schedule, getting a fifth seed when I think they were picked 10th. Overall, only a mere no one else on the all ACC teams are honorable mention. So I thought Brad Brownell should have got a little more consideration. I know they finished fifth and didn't finish top four, but it's very hard to make any sort of argument against Brad Brownell being the ACC coach of the year.
That was something that was very interesting to me, to see the disparaging vote differential and the fact that he did not receive.
He was way down there. Yeah,
he was only received two votes. And I'm with you. I thought that he would have been closer, maybe even third. And to see that was a little bit shocking. You look at strength of schedule, as you just mentioned, you look at the fact that they went out of conference and played some really difficult teams, not just sleepwalking, not canceling. They played these teams and won. And so I'm right there with you. I think ultimately that'll help them in tournament time. But yeah, that's an interesting tidbit to look at there.
For sure. Now, we have the ACC tournament coming up. As Max said, we will have Jordan Cornette joining us. We're going to release an emergency pod tomorrow, so you won't have to wait until Thursday. And we're going to have Cornette break down all these games with us. Mac, if we can, super quickly, let's just preview the games that are going to be happening today, Tuesday. And JC is going to come on and talk to us about the rest of the tournament. But it's these day one games. The first one is 2 p.m. on ACC Network, Pitt in Miami. The winner of this game gets Clemson. These are two teams that have been decimated. Miami, injuries. Pitt, transfers. I think in this game, I'm leaning Miami just because they have Isaiah Wong. But this is a game between two rosters that look nothing like they looked at the beginning of the season.
And it's going to be interesting, right? It's kind of that 1-2. We thought Pitt was going to be this scrappy team. You've got a guy in Champagne who possibly ACC player of the year at one point. And then guys are just leaving. Guys are peacing out. And you had this really sweet nucleus of a class that now none of them are even there. And so for both Pittsburgh and Miami, it's kind of like, well, what are we playing for? Are we going to make any noise? It'll be interesting. I think you kind of lean towards Pitt just because of what Miami has gone through injury-wise, COVID-wise,
Okay. Not
being there. But that it's going to be an interesting game to me. One that's maybe a little bit more interesting is this Boston College versus Duke game. 4:30, yeah. ACC Network, Duke has to win to keep playing. Are we going to see a team that we have very recently, they're checked out, they've moved on, guys are going to the NBA, guys are going to the draft, whatever, or are we going to see a team that's going to fight their tails off and try to make this tournament?
So here's what's really interesting about this game. I think Duke wins it just because I think BC, they haven't necessarily given up, but they don't have a coach. They are, you know, playing walk-ons. Like BC is just, I don't think they have enough firepower. But here's where Duke really hurt themselves down the stretch. Because when you're playing on day one, you got to win 5 games in 5 days to win the ACC tournament. It's never happened. However, if you start playing on day two, it has happened before. Duke won the ACC tournament as a 5 seed a couple of years ago, playing on day two. And the way to play on day two, you got to be an 8 or a 9. Duke is the 10. So they were so close to playing in that 8-9 game, and it would have been possible for them to run the table from day two. But you can't run the table from day one. So even if they beat BC, I think they lose to Louisville. And if they somehow beat Louisville, then they lose to Florida State. But legs-wise, you just can't do it, Mac. It's impossible.
It sounds like a very miserable thing to do. I kind of reflect on my AAU days right. Where we played 2 games in one day, and then you play 1 game the next day, and it's just like, dude, I just want to go home. I want to go. I'm dead. I'm tired
of being
dead.
You're dead.
That's
by
right.
Day three.
So it's a tough thing to do. The last game tonight, the late night game, not too late, 7 p.m. ACC Network, Wake Forest, Notre Dame. I have no clue what to expect in this game. Are we going to see the Notre Dame that just beat down Florida State, or are we going to see, you know, the team that we have each and every year where they only won 7 ACC games?
Mac, keep an eye on the winner of this game, which is going to be Notre Dame. It's going to be Notre Dame. Notre Dame's feeling good. And here's the thing about Notre Dame. They can score. they can score and they can shoot the ball. Wake Forest, if you talk about checking out, the two teams to me that have completely checked out of the season are Wake and Boston College. So I think Notre Dame's going to win this. And what I know about Notre Dame is they can score it and they can shoot it. What I question about North Carolina is if they can shoot it. So if Notre Dame's feeling good, if they get hot, that is a sneaky, sneaky upset situation. And we're going to ask Cornette more about this tomorrow. I think there's a possibility Notre Dame wins not one but two games in this ACC tournament. So keep an eye on the Irish, who seem to be feeling good and have some new life after their students booed their coach. Maybe that was what they needed.
Listen, Kelly is just the nicest host. She welcomes our guests in. She lays it all out there for Cornette to be feeling really good. Jordan,
ain't no chance.
Y'all might win one. You're not winning two. I can't wait to talk to you guys. Again, Jordan Cornette will be joining us. One of our dear, dear friends, just one of the best talents that we have at the ACC Network.
A dear, dear friend.
Yeah, that's right. He's going to break it all down and just talk about the future of this tournament. We might even ask him some NCAA tournaments and who he think is going to win it all. Maybe even just his prediction on the Final Four. But
also, who his favorite analyst is to work with on the huddle.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking
to him about that.
That's no question about it. No question
about
it.
We'll see what he says.
But that's it for this episode of Gramlich and McLean. Guys, if you haven't already, go check out Richmond Weaver's podcast, Rich Take on Sports. We love his podcast so much. He does a great job on there and really all walks of life. I mean, if there's something that you're interested in, Richmond has covered it on his podcast. Go check that out anywhere you get your podcasts. And this is another great episode brought to you by Traeger Grills of the Gramlich and McLean podcast. Thank you all for listening. If you haven't already, go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, drop us a little rating, a little review. It's always great to hear from you guys. But until next time, we'll see y'all.